Can I ask you something? What's your family story worth to you? And I'm not talking about the shiny ones that everybody knows about. I mean the buried ones, the secrets, the heartbreaks, the ones that only slipped out after a night of too much Hennessy. That's what Vietnam Story Bank is for. No polish, no rewrites, no editing, just raw, recorded, beautiful beating history. The kind that makes you sit up and hold your breath. Your father's memories of his mother's wildest dreams, your grandparents' laughter that echoes in your bones. We dig it all up, we record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, untouchable, and unforgettable. Because when your stories disappear, they're gone forever. So go to VietnamStoryBank.com today and make sure your family's stories are recorded. Hey, gentlemen, welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. I'm really honored today. This is Veterans Day, and the three of us are veterans of the United States, Vietnamese American veterans, and we're doing this segment for many different reasons. And we want to figure out how to open up the conversation with future guests that are part of the Vietnamese American diaspora, military. And I really appreciate you both reaching out and coming on to the podcast to talk about your own experience and really to commemorate a real big community of Vietnamese Americans in the military. So welcome to the Vietnamese podcast.
Thanks for having us, Kid. It's Ken. It's an honor to be here.
So today I have Tino and I have Tom. Both of you have spent many years in the military. We are here because of your affiliation with the Vietnamese American military. Tino, would you explain to us what this community is?
Sure. So Tom and I are former board members of the Vietnamese American Uniformed Services Association. And we'll put a link here for everyone to access the site. It's a 501c19 non-for-profit veteran service organization. And we represent those who are either active duty and currently serving or who have formerly served in the United States Uniformed Services. Uniformed Services is a broad bucket, which includes the ones we know of, which are the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marine Corps, but also the ones you may not be as familiar with, such as the Coast Guard, the U.S. Public Health Service Corps, and the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. These are civilian agencies, but they actually do military-like functions, and they have uniforms and ranks. And kind of the unifying purpose of all of this is that we all believe very strongly in public service and giving back to our country, the United States. And we have members of all ranks and all services, and we hope to have those individuals participate in future series on your podcast.
It's fascinating because when you exist in the world as a human being and you're part of, like, you know, you're into rock music or you're into fashion, you would never imagine as a Vietnamese American that there is this organization out there that is focused on Vietnamese American veterans. And it's mind-blowing to me that this exists. How did it come about?
Yeah, so believe it or not, there have been Vietnamese Americans who have served in the United States Armed Forces as early as the mid-1980s. People that they're refugees themselves that came, you know, in the late 70s and early 80s, and they were of military age, and they went back in and they served in the military, sometimes over the objections of their parents, right? Or it took a lot of personal courage because they knew what war was, they knew what military service entailed, and yet they still went and decided to serve in the military. And really, it's kind of the community serves kind of a threefold purpose. So one is, almost all of us are the descendants of our fathers, our uncles, our parents who are refugees from the former Republic of Vietnam. And we really kind of pay homage and respect their sacrifices and their courage during the Vietnam War. So we're very much grateful to them. And we want to honor them, especially because American history and world history often overlooks, you know, what they went through and focuses either on, you know, the North Vietnamese side or on the American side, but they kind of disregard the ARVN. The second is that we really exist to help each other and foster professional success and professional development. And we help each other rise through the ranks. So, you know, we have had several Vietnamese Americans, we'll talk about later, who are general officers, which is a very, very significant accomplishment. And also doing all kinds of, you know, jobs throughout the military. And the third is promoting the future. So we want to encourage public service. We know that the military service and uniform services is not for everybody, but we think that, you know, there may be a lot of misconceptions or a lack of understanding of what military service entails within the Vietnamese American community and within the American society, right? And we want to dispel those myths and really make it open to help people understand what are the benefits and the you know, the joys of military service entail.
Who put this?
I just want to also add, ahead, Tom. Kenneth, is that the VA USA is also open up to the families, and you know, we're growing. You know, it started off with a handful of veterans or service members, and now we have a few thousand as part of our organization.
Who started the organization? Who put it together?
Yeah, so it exists. There were predecessor organizations that existed, I would say, in the kind of late 90s. And I'll throw out some names too. But I would say kind of the current incarnation really was an outgrowth. So Chris Phan is Commander Chris Phan, U.S. Navy retired, Judge Advocate General, Lieutenant Colonel retired, G-Boy of Northern California. There may be some other names I'm forgetting, but essentially around 2009 or so, 2008, they got together and like, okay, let's kind of start a formal organization, because we had existed as informal networks. Like when you see somebody on a base and you see the Nguyen or Dun, you know, name tape, oh, you know, hey, and we would hang out together and go out wherever we were stationed together, whether that was downrange in Iraq or, you know, in Korea or Japan or whatever, or Germany. These gentlemen, they decided to kind of formally incorporate the organization and, you know, do kind of more formal activities and programs. So one of them was kind of professional mentorship. The other was at this time in the early 2010s, you had Iraq and Afghanistan going on. And there were 12 Vietnamese American service members that lost their lives in these conflicts. And one in the early 90s in a Khobar Towers bombing in Saudi Arabia. So in 12 Vietnamese Americans who have given the ultimate sacrifice in uniform, and we wanted to honor, you know, their sacrifice and their legacy. So the organization established a scholarship, you know, in their name to Vietnamese American high school and college students to promote public service and kind of honor the sacrifices of those fallen heroes, as we call them. And also, again, to kind of pay respect and homage to our parents and the Arvin veterans as well. So we would show up to community events in uniform, you know, that back and Joe, they love that, right? To see us in, you know, U.S. military uniforms, kind of remembering their service. And then it just kind of grew as an outgrowth from there, more activities, more presence in the community, you know, more encouraging people to sign up for service.
Tom, can you give me a brief history of how you joined, why you joined, and a little bit about your career?
Sure. Start off, I grew up in Orange County, California. I immigrated to the United States as a three-year-old in 1975. And, you know, I grew up trying to assimilate into the, you know, American lifestyle, and didn't know much about the military. My parents never talked about the military. They rarely talked about the Vietnam War. But as I grew up and read more about history, I guess it was my calling in high school to say, hey, I should serve as a way to give back. You know, the traditional Vietnamese families were pushing their children, you know, my brothers and sisters, to be doctors, engineers. And I said, Mom, I don't want to do that. I want to try something else. I want to go see the world. And so in high school, I applied to West Point, and my new chapter, my new journey began. You know, I thought I was going to go serve 5 years and go back to California and enjoy the, you know, California beach and hang out. But I guess my calling today, serve some more. you know, 30 years later, you know, I served for 30 years and, you know, I was like, wow, this is awesome. I was a military intelligence officer and then I switched over to acquisition. So, you know, allowed me to deploy to Iraq, Afghanistan. You know, I've had a been to many places across the globe, and it's been one great adventure serving the nation. In my retirement, which I retired last year, I said, hey, this is a new chapter, new opportunity. What's my new purpose in life? How can I serve? And I, as a retiree now, I work with the military community. I work with a lot of the academy cadets and midshipmen. I work with just fellow DoD students, and you know, I mentor, coach them. I meet with my classmates, and just stay involved with the local community.
And you've been involved with VA USA for how long?
Five years? Yeah. So. No, like 10,
10 years.
Over 10 years. So I met Tino through the VA USA. And, you know, I spent a lot of time with that organization. I'm no longer a board member, but, you know, I'm proud to be a member. And, you know, we want to pay back. We want to serve our community. Also, we have a great time, learning about the Vietnamese culture.
A lot of no.
Can't do without that. Yeah. Tina, would you tell me about your history and why you joined and what you did in the military?
Sure. So I'm originally from Houston, Texas, and I was born here in the U.S. In 1976. And my father was a graduate of the Võ Binh Đà Lạt, which is like the South Vietnam's version of West Point. It was patterned after West Point. So I kind of grew up in a household that always kind of revered military service and talked about, you know, South Vietnam and fighting for democracy, you know, all that stuff. But my personal interest was, you know, I grew up on Luke Skywalker, Top Gun, NASA. You know, I wanted to be an astronaut, right? So, and I wanted to go to school out of state, and we couldn't afford it unless it was through the military, right? So, and I was kind of a skinny little Asian kid, and I needed a place that kind of would toughen me up, right? So I was ambitious, and I was an ambitious nerd, right? And I wanted to be an astronaut, and I applied to all the academies and to RCC programs, and it took me 2 tries, but I eventually was able to get into the Air Force Academy. You know, engineering kind of kicked my butt, wasn't able to go to the astronaut track. I had glasses, you know, so I wasn't able to fly. So I got into intelligence, and I had always had an interest in history and foreign languages. I minored in Mandarin. I was always interested in the geopolitics of the region, and the intelligence career field is essentially geopolitics, right? So I served a total of 8 years active duty, mostly, you know, in Korea, Hawaii, had a great run. I was an advisor in Iraq, kind of ironic because, you know, my dad had hosted American advisors to South Vietnam, and, you know, I was an American advisor to Iraq. And it was kind of funny because I had what showed up, you know, with a U.S. Air Force name tape, but the Iraqis that I advised didn't believe I was an American. It took a little while to first convince them, yes, I'm an American. I'm not a coalition forces person. And that was actually a bond because they would ask, you know, they would ask me about Vietnam and say, oh, you know, Vietnam's strong, beat America, right? Like, it's just kind of a weird historical irony. Yeah, so I got out after 8 years of active duty and I went into the private sector, but I always really, you know, valued my time in service. A really good friend of ours, Ross Nguyen, he's U.S. Army retired lieutenant colonel. You know, we had tried to set up different associations, and so I kind of pulled him into this VA USA, and he became a chairman, you know, eventually at one point. But you know, we always valued our military service, but also our Vietnamese heritage, and VSA USA was the place where we could really celebrate both and find a community of people that had that interest in common, those two interests in common.
So it wouldn't be the Vietnamese podcast if I go in and dig about identity while you are early in the military. I am curious to hear both of your identity journeys as it relates to the early years, because it was difficult for me. And I think that going into the military, there's certain expectations from myself to myself, thinking that the conformity, the different values that we might have, and I think that all of us come from different places as an American. You know, if your father was somebody from Babidalat, you know, maybe you have a different sort of flavor or spin about joining the U.S. military. Or if you're 3 years old coming from Vietnam, there might be a different sort of like. So I'm curious to hear each one of your journey through the first few years, and then what it felt like, you know, 30 years later or 8 years later, who you've become. Tom, let's start with you.
Yeah, like Tino, my father was a academy grad in Vietnam. He was an Air Force pilot. You know, if he was a bird dog, you know, flew the Cessna 01. You know, my mom worked for the embassy, so she was an attaché. So they were involved in the Vietnamese government. When Saigon fell, you know, I was the 75 crowd, so, you know, they never talked about it in the States. I guess there was a lot of trauma, a lot of pain. They didn't want their kids to, I guess right, wrong, or indifferent. They didn't want their kids to, you know, I guess go over that trauma. So when I joined, my dad was proud, but I think both my parents were concerned that it was not for me. Because they knew nothing about the U.S. Army, the U.S. military. So I kind of came in blind in the fact that, you know, all I knew about the military was what I read. So when I applied to West Point, I didn't know much about it. It was half, you know, it was across the country. And, you know, I had never left Southern California, maybe Las Vegas, or go down to Tijuana, you know, with the family, but I had never left. So when it was a strange, a rude awakening. You know, if you go back to Vietnamese culture, values, stereotypes, you know, like I grew up a really shy, 130-pound, you know, high school kid. My mom was worried that, wow, you're not going to survive at the academy because you're too small. You don't know what's going on. You're away from your family. And for me, it was a challenge. I was like, wow, I get to see the world and, you know, I can do it. And so when I went to the academy, you know, yes, it was a challenge. Yes, it was a rude awakening. But, you know, part of the Vietnamese heritage culture, you know, we're a survivor culture. We might be, again, I'm perhaps some stereotypes, but, you know, the Vietnamese culture is believes in harmony, respect for elders. It tends to be kind of quiet. You don't voice out. So I came across as shy throughout my early years. But the resilience, being adaptable, you know, it pushed me through the academy and throughout my career as an officer. I learned, I assimilated to the American culture, but I also remembered my roots, my Vietnamese roots as an officer. And, you know, that combination perhaps, you know, helped me survive and have a military career for 30 years, you know, with my own type of leadership style. But, you know, throughout my career, most of it was, hey, I want to serve. I want to pay back. I'm proud of my culture. I'm proud of being American. I honor the American soldiers who fought for us, our freedoms, the American dream and ideals, but also I'm proud of being Vietnamese. You know, through what Tino mentioned, the VAUSA, I was brought back to understand my roots better. You know, I made new friends through VAUSA throughout the country. And, you know, I think that helped kind of, give me a new purpose or open my eyes some more. It's like, hey, I can serve my country, but also to go back and honor my culture.
Wonderful. Tino?
It's kind of always been a continuous journey, as we all know, right? And the way you approach your identity evolves over time. I grew up in a Vietnamese kind of enclave in Southeast Houston, so I was very exposed and immersed in that environment. And I always was fascinated by the stories that my parents would tell. You know, they were kind of that elite class in Vietnam, and talking about, they did talk about the war, right? And it was always, it sounded very, I hate to say it, but kind of interesting and adventurous. And I felt like, you know, history had bypassed me and I got stuck in this boring suburb in Houston and I didn't get to do anything interesting. And I wanted to get out of there and I wanted a bigger life than that. So for me, the military was my ticket, right, to get out of that. I always was really super interested in the history of South Vietnam, right? Like, you know, I would scour these American, you know, histories of the Vietnam War, and there was always this missing piece of it that I would get through stories from my dad and my uncles and his friends. You know, and almost every weekend they would have big gatherings and, you know, and they talk about the old days. And there was a time, you know, way back in like the early 80s where, oh, we're going to take back the country, right? We're going to, let's plot and, you know, find a way to, you know, restore democracy in Vietnam, right? That's the kind of environment that I grew up in. And you know, so I was really obsessed with the history and the politics and the regional geopolitics. I, you know, so when I got to the academy, I you know, went away from engineering. That's the course of study that I pursued. I started to research military to military relations between the U.S. and the Vietnamese government, which was starting to evolve at the time in the late 90s. I really wanted to be the person that could be the bridge between the U.S. government and the Vietnamese government. You know, it turned out other people kind of took on that mantle, much more talented than I. But that was kind of my interest in trying to merge my professional interest with my cultural background. I helped to start an Asian student organization at the Air Force Academy to kind of, a lot of it was just us going out and eating pho, right? But we wanted to find a way to not forget our cultural roots. But at the same time, you know, we're American, right? You know, as I got older, you know, my wife is Korean. We don't teach our kids Vietnamese. So it's always the struggle. Like, I don't feel like I'm Vietnamese enough, you know, but at the same time, I still care very deeply about maintaining our cultural connection and helping out with organizations like VUSA and other organizations that help the community. So it's a continuous kind of journey, a continuous struggle for me.
At any point in your service, did you ever doubt why you were in the service? Did you ever wonder why, as Vietnamese people, Tom, it sounds like your story about, you know, giving back was very strong. But as I was going through as a young man, 17, 18, 19 year old, I was thinking like, wow, like, why am I fighting alongside white Americans, right? That thought came through my mind a lot. And now, when I'm thinking about the generals and the admirals that came up probably during the same time that I was like joining, I think about that too. Did the thought cross both of your minds as you were coming up through the ranks? And if so, can you talk about it? And if not, I'd love to hear why it didn't occur to you.
I'll jump in. Just listening to Tino's story, stroke some memories. You know, I came in 75, you know, Garden Grove, California. The first wave of the first, I think, 1.5 million wave of Vietnamese refugees coming in. But I was 3 years old. And I just remember a handful of Vietnamese, I think maybe two or three Vietnamese classmates. And I was 3 years old, so I wanted to, when I went to school, I wanted to assimilate. So I think I tried to be an American, whatever that meant. Mm-hmm. And so throughout my, I guess, my high school, junior high, elementary school years, I wanted to be an American. And so I didn't speak the language. I my vocabulary was very basic for Vietnamese. And so I just identified as American. And, you know, I'm vague about that because I watched some of my Vietnamese friends come into the States. They didn't speak English very well or fluently. They were teased by our classmates, and it just caused me to to ask why. But I think because of that, I said, okay, I'm just gonna go through school as as an American. And so when I joined the military, that's what I d identified as. I just kind of just did my thing. But somewhere in my mid-career, meeting guys like Tino and Ross, Finn, and some of the VA USA leadership, they kind of brought me back to being proud of your heritage. Because it wasn't that I wasn't proud. I just wanted to be like everybody else. What I learned through VA USA and through my friends and through camaraderie through the culture was, hey, you should be proud of your rich heritage, your ancestors. Your parents have done so much, have sacrificed so much coming here, and that sparked the I guess my pay it back to not only to serve the country but to be with to serve with Vietnamese Americans, and to honor that, to mentor, to socialize, to just I have a ton of Vietnamese American friends now, and just embrace the culture. Well, to answer your question now, in the military, did I ever question that? No, I because I always identified as an American. That was my motivation to serve. I questioned some of my how long I was going to stay in. I questioned if I was good enough to be a leader, a senior leader in the army. But I think just the again, just the hard work, and just serving your country, let the promotions and everything speak for itself, and go along. If it didn't happen, I'd say, okay, thank you, I served, and I would get out, but not knowing, 30 years later, I would still be in. So I didn't question it, but there was a journey as far as I guess everyone's goes through serving your purpose. What's your purpose in life? Did you pick the right profession? What's your why? And I think mine was to serve in the military, and then when I retired, it's like I'm still trying to figure out what my why is now. And I think what I'm doing now is volunteering and serving alongside fellow veterans and military, in a different with a different hat on,
Yeah, so I didn't really doubt my service, and there's kind of two reasons. So when I initially joined, and in kind of my admissions interviews, I really talked a lot about how I wanted to repay the United States for the opportunity it gave us, right? They were refugees, and it accepted us and gave us this chance to kind of, this was my chance to pay it back to by serving in the country. And then as I got in, and I think we can all point to racism in the military, right? Like I grew up in a Vietnamese enclave, and in a good way, the military and that boot camp experience, the basic experience, it forced me to become best friends with people from all different walks of life and get out of kind of that Asian like bubble, right? So that was a great thing. I did, there were racists, but the institution was not racist in my experience. You talk to some of the old guys that grew up in the 80s, maybe it was different, but at least in my experience, anytime somebody said some vile racist thing, there were 10 other people that had my back and would ostracize that guy, right? So to me, it was a real signifier that I joined the right place. Like, this is truly a diverse meritocracy that welcomes anybody from wherever they come, and if you can meet the standard, you will excel. And I really love that kind of environment. And as I we had at the Air Force Academy, we had I learned about the My Lai massacre, right? And that it didn't question my service to the military, but it made me question, is the United States always the good guy, right? And then we had but then we had guest speakers who are POWs in the Hanoi Hilton, you know, and I talked to them, it was kind of an awkward thing, right? Like, do they view me as an enemy? You know, do they still have some harbor some ill feeling? And I would talk to these gentlemen, these, you know, POW camp survivors, and they were, they didn't have those ill feelings, right? So again, it bolstered my sense that America, maybe, you know, we are the good guys, right? We make mistakes, but we always strive to do better. And what makes us the good guys is we don't shy away from our history. You know, we can acknowledge that the terrible, barbaric things Americans have done in the past and learn from it and avoid it in the future. And then I'll say kind of the final thing is what really confirmed that, what kind of strengthened my faith in military service and the United States. So I befriended some members of the Japanese American 442nd Regimental Combat Team. So these were Japanese Americans whose parents were incarcerated during World War II, and yet they became the most decorated combat unit in the history of the United States military, right? And they, for me, showed that path that it's not just, okay, thank you, America, you know, for giving, we're the good immigrants, thank you for giving this chance. It's no, it's we are Americans. We earned it. You know, we sacrificed our blood for this country. Nobody can call us less than American, right? And then the Japanese Americans really showed me that example. And that's what I really saw as the Vietnamese Americans could do. We are, you know, we can be proud of our heritage, but, you know, and some people say, well, why do you call yourself Vietnamese American? Why do you hyphenate? Why can't you just be Americans? And I don't think it's an either or. You can be both. You can be proud of your heritage, but you can also be a, you know, a loyal, patriotic American. So to me, that's how I kind of reconcile it in my mind. Now we, you know, we could have another discussion about, you know, the current environment, but I'll save that for
Yeah, the current environment is such a tricky thing to talk about when we are basically all on the same team, but we have very different viewpoints. And like I always try to do on the Vietnamese podcast is never to get into political camps. And debate that out. But at the same time, I like to talk about the differences that we all exist in. And I, I'm not here to get into policies or, you know, what teams we're playing on. But I definitely recognize that within this room, Tino, Tom, Ken, you know, the three of us we are playing on different teams, and we don't need to get into policies of it. But I also am very impressed that because we all play on different teams, that we're able to really get together and really appreciate each other's work. But I don't think that that's like the rest of America right now. And I am curious to hear your viewpoints on the diversity and how we're able to exist as Vietnamese veterans within the armed services.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk. Crazy weather we're having. No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan, $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer, first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
But still manage to see each other once a year, still manage to keep in touch with each other, still manage to reach out and be a community. How does that mechanically work for our community of Vietnamese American veterans? Can you guys get into that?
Yeah, I'll start. Yeah, that's a very sensitive question. You know, America is far from a perfect nation, but you know, the ideals, you know, our constitution is a guideline. You know, and when I say that, we could still live in harmony, you know, and have freedoms of our beliefs, you know, religion, you know, basically according to the constitution. But I think there's a mutual respect for one another. We can have a mutual respect for one another and, you know, coexist, you know. For the VA USA, our common background, our culture might be a way to keep that coexistence, regardless of what our political beliefs or values are. I think there's a mutual respect that we served with one another the military fellowship, brotherhood, sisterhood, you know, keeps us intact. A lot of military, service members are apolitical in uniform. You know, that's the reason why somebody can follow, obey lawful orders. Yeah, I think that's a difficult one because there's a lot of service members, a lot of Vietnamese Americans have strong beliefs, you know, they want to voice that opinion. But then if you find yourself with a friend that doesn't believe the same political, like, you know, ideologies or values, does that mean that person's not your friend? And I think for me, it's just respect for the person, regardless of their political ideologies.
I love
not sure if I answered your question.
Yeah, you did. You nailed it. And I really respect that. And, you know, in the spirit of sort of, you know, banding together to get these missions accomplished, that's a very, you know, good answer, because I wish in this climate, both the diaspora Vietnamese communities and Vietnam itself, I wish we could sort of regulate ourselves to kind of not get emotional and then sort of work through all of the issues that we have with the flags or, you know, all of the identity things that are related to the loss that we experience with our parents' generation. But to kind of like put in a framework, I mean, it's, you know, dealing with each other is very hard, you know, especially when we have different political ideologies. But the ability to work through this is a beautiful thing that I hope that both the Vietnamese diaspora can see the outreach of the Vietnamese government and vice versa. I think a lot of Vietnamese people in the diaspora are reaching out to, you know, do a lot of work there. But I think it starts with this tiny conversation in this niche called the Vietnamese American Veterans World. And this is sort of like a projection out into the real big world of this. And Tino, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat or lie that in the United States, kind of the partisan rancor and division has kind of infected a lot of our relationships, whether that's even amongst our own family and friends, even amongst my classmates and people that I thought we shared common values with through military service or because we belonged to the same, you know, Vietnamese organizations or because we're family members. And, you know, to find out, well, maybe we don't have the same values. And that's really disappointing. But the way I kind of get through it is, you know, I think about an organization like VAUSA, there are people that I disagree with politically, but if they need help, I will help. If they need help finding a job, if they need professional advice, you know, I'm not going to like give them a political litmus test. I will help them. Right. And also, I think we're unified by, you know, our common faith is public service. Right. We all took an oath of office. We all believe in these universal virtues like, you know, self-sacrifice and service and honesty and duty. Right. Those are kind of common virtues that we can universally acknowledge. And we can respect that. So though, you know, there may be individuals with whom I don't have political agreement, it doesn't stop me from respecting them as a person, right? And looking for some kind of common ground. And I think that's the same. It could be, we can extend that even to our own family and friends. I think, can you mention the Vietnamese, you know, between, let's say, our Gong Dong, Gong Hoa, right? And the diaspora community and Vietnam, right? Now we're in the 50th anniversary of the end of the war, and you have a lot of Vietnamese, overseas Vietnamese, you know, I'm interested as well, going doing business in Vietnam. And, you know, from, I'm sure anybody that's traveled there, you've, once you meet the people there, this kind of ideological divide, it doesn't really exist. It's a made up thing. Like, why I hate somebody? You have no personal beef against them, right? You know, there are bad people in a good system and there are good people in a bad system, right? And they're just humans. You know, once you talk to them, you get past all this. The ideology thing is this kind of fake division. So it's a kind of an ironic thing that ideological division that it caused Vietnamese people to kill each other, you know, 50 years ago. The fear is that that's going to happen in the United States. And, you know, perhaps we can be that messenger. You know, we lived through it. Our families lived through it. Hey, at the end of the day, it's not worth hating each other, right? We have a lot more in common than we have, differences. And there's still a path towards avoiding, all of that conflict.
You know, with audiences that are, in their 20s and 30s that are listening right now, what kind of words would you say to them as they're dealing with their parents and their grandparents' ideological differences, whether it's within the current U.S. government administration or whether it's a conversation that they're saying, hey, mom and dad, I want to go back to Vietnam and I want to do business. And then the mom and dad are like, no, you can't do it because of yada, yada, yada. What is your words of advice to young people today who want to cross the divide, both ideologically here in America and, want to cross the ideological divide in our relations with Vietnam's people?
Tino, like you, I'm a lifelong learner, right? You always have to open your ears and listen. And you mentioned, it's been 50 years since the first wave of immigrants came, 1975. So when I retired, it was like 50 years. I went back to Vietnam and you had described what I had, those mixed emotions I had. I was like, well, I'm not going back there. It's a communist country. But also was curious. I was like, 50 years, it's 50 years later. I want to see where I was born. I want to see and talk to the people. And, what I learned was, regardless of the, I guess your type of government, they're people, and the Vietnamese people are my culture. So my curiosity, my quest or my thirst to find out about my past, my culture, brought me back to Vietnam. So what would I would tell the youth? Know your history, understand what your parents or your ancestors went through, but also, keep an open ear. We're all human beings. We all strive for, growth, to survive and, just love life, love your brothers and sisters, regardless of its, your blood, your fellow countrymen, also, the global society. And if you have that in mind, I think it keeps you with open ears. And again, just respect your parents, your ancestry's past, but also, just be open-minded. And I think that's all you can ask.
I'll jump in here. I love your question, Ken. I think we're all used to, they call it code switching, kind of spanning multiple worlds, whether that's between Vietnam and the US, whether that's a blue county like Arlington, Virginia, and going to a red county like, Harris County, Texas, right? Or even between United States and Vietnam. I would say for those looking to expand their horizons, I would say, number one, don't allow yourself to be manipulated by the uninformed opinion of others, right? So as a person who's very attuned to, information and influence operations and the social media algorithms, right? They're all designed to provoke outrage, right? And rather than foster understanding. So don't view the world through the filter of Facebook and YouTube. Right. Like you gotta like understand it and have a more sophisticated understanding of how the world works, number one. But then number two, go out and see it for yourself. Right. Anybody that preaches this fear or hate, it's because it's always driven by ignorance. They haven't actually been there, right? So if you are a MAGA person and this, crime-ridden San Francisco hellhole, okay, why don't you go there and talk to the people that live there, right? Or vice versa, this is a, Dallas is this, you know, it's like Gilead, right? It's like, you know, no freedom, you know, hellhole that, you know, where it's persecuting minorities. Well, go there and actually talk to people and you'll find Dallas is super diverse, right? So I think just physically being there and talking to the people and having an open conversation and not trying to push your point of view or advocate for something you heard online and just listen, like Tom said. And same thing with Vietnam. Like, that you're exactly right, Ken. Like, a lot of the older generation, I will never go back to Vietnam. So long as they're ruled by communists, I will never go back. But then there's a lot of people, they go back and it's like, it really just opens your eyes. It's not like how they say it is. So just go there and talk to people. And if you decide at that time, okay, well, this is not for me. Okay, at least you did it. At least you extended the effort and actually saw with your own eyes and spoke to a person in person, not through, you know, an algorithm or social media, you know, chat thread, right? You actually talked to somebody. I think you'll have a much more informed understanding of viewpoints other than your own.
Love both of your answers. It is so hopeful because we are the next generation of elders, and we probably have another 25, 30 year runway of contemplating these relationships that we have with our, you know, our motherland and our current country, which is the United States of America. And it's a kind of a beautiful place to be for us, the three of us. And it's also a remarkable responsibility that we have to kind of shape that narrative that we really want love and peace. And, you know, ironically, we're former members of the military. You know, the USA is a killing machine, and in some ways, we are the best at it. And I'm very proud to have served in the United States Marine Corps. But at the same time, the thoughts of the legacy of war lingers within my heart. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on if you guys were ever conflicted with the legacies of war within the history or reviewing the history. Because once I got out, I went to USC, studied anthropology, and my world, just the doors just blew open. And having to deal with the historical side of like what the United States military did in Vietnam and really trying to figure all of this complexity out is where I exist today. And I know sometimes it's a tough place to kind of like talk about these things, especially we want to honor all of the people like us that are going through the ranks now or living in the military right now. It's a very complex thing that I would love to hear your thoughts on, you know, after you got out, have you guys thought about the legacy of war from the United States and the Vietnamese perspective?
Yeah, so I as a retiree, I struggle with the fact that, you know, I believe the strong defense I serve, you know, I was an intel officer. I was an acquisition. I was into technology, building weapon systems. You know, I strongly believe that, you know, a strong nation enforces the democracy. But then now as a retiree, you know, how do I embrace my past, but also, you know, live as a veteran or a retiree? And, you know, it's kind of a, you know, right now I you know, while I volunteer, I try to live a simple, peaceful life. I want harmony, you know, kind of like different from my military life.
Yeah.
But again, I go back to, you know, believing in a strong nation, a strong defense. And so, yeah, so I struggle with that, I guess, ideal. But I think you can live both, you know, and that's why I'm very close to the military community. I'm very close to my classmates and to my colleagues, my fellow service members, and I still meet with them once a month. My classmates, I go on vacation and road trips with fellow Vietnam vets, you know, who are retirees, and I listen to their stories. My life is still embraces, you know, my military fellowship. But yeah, how do you coexist again with that, you know, the Spartan warrior lifestyle and then wanting peace? I think for me is you have to have a strong defense to have that. But how do you go about implement policies that maintain peace and coexistence amongst nations, you know, the country? And then again, that's a very challenging and difficult, a complex problem.
Yeah.
Set.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, I know you have a different perspective, Tom, because, you know, 30 years of service is like an incredible amount of time, and you're still processing it, right? I did a much shorter stint, and I've been out longer now, and so I've reflected a lot on it. And, you know, I think that it's really important to foster healthy kind of civil military relationships, right? I think the military in the United States is like something like our veterans, right? Less than 2% of the population that serve in the military. And it's a lot of times it's like a family generational thing, right? If you live in Southern California, unless you're living next to, I don't know, San Diego, you're not really exposed to people in uniform or the military. There's a lot of misconceptions about what that's like. I like to think that veterans and those who have been to war are the ones that are the ones who hate war the most, right? Like nobody actively wants to kill and harm people, right? It's more about deterrence and creating the conditions for a more peaceful world, right? I'm not going to be naive and say that, you know, war, of course, war is terrible, and you need, there's always going to be, it's humanity, right? Human nature. There's always going to be the need for kind of warriors. But at the same time, like, there's a difference between a warrior and like a soldier, right? A warrior lives for war, right? But a soldier is a public, is a servant of the state, right? And it demands a strong code of ethics and professionalism. And you need those kind of people, the people with really strong moral compass out there making those kind of hard decisions when the time comes for those decisions to be made. So I think like the profession of arms requires good people, right? The people that do that are not the kind of people that want to go out and you know, blow things up and kill people. Like that's not what really professional kind of soldiers and military people are all about.
You know, I want to circle back to the VA USA, the members, if you guys are meeting annually, and there is sort of like a difference in all these political cultures within the organization. How does that work out? You know, in terms of seeing each other every year, you know, and we know, you know, you're on one side, I'm on the other side. Like, how does that all play out? I'm curious.
Well, you know, when you say we meet once a year, we usually have a once a year formal banquet. Tino and I are very close with the fellowship. Whenever there's a fellow member in visiting DC, one of us shoot email out and say, hey, such and such is in town. Let's go meet at a favorite Vietnamese restaurant to break bread together. And, you know, we meet. So, I mean, that happens at least once a month.
Wow.
And formally,
mostly because of Tom is the colonel of, you know.
So we do a lot of social events. And, you know, like, same with my classmates. So I'm, you know, as a retiree, I really appreciate the fellowship and, love my brothers and sisters, and I'm always on the phone. I'm always grabbing a cup of coffee or something with a fellow classmate, a fellow Vietnamese American, you know, veteran, anyone related to the military. So, you know, and again, all of us have different ideologies, and sometimes we talk about it. It gets heated sometimes, but there's a respect, a love and respect for one another. You know, fellow service member, and that keeps us, let's say, friends. But you're right. It sometimes can be challenging, especially if you have strong opinions and you go deep into those conversations. But the thing is, I think what keeps us together with the Vayusa is a respect for the serving together, and then there's a respect for the culture. You know, we're fellow Vietnamese Americans. We're a minority.
a minority inside of a minority.
Yeah, right.
Totally.
And, you know, Cafe Ciudad or Bola Fa, you can, you know, embrace your heritage, your culture, and then also talk, if you want to, politics.
I mean, even without the politics thing, it's actually even within this tiny minority inside a minority, there's a lot of diversity, right? Tom and I give each other crap all the time because he's Army and I'm Air Force. And, you know, I'm That's part of the Air Force and, you know, like Army's better. And, you know, we have Marines and, you know, like it's everyone's, you know, and you know, you have people different backgrounds. You can be a, you know, a Marine Corps Lance Corporal, you know, or you could be a, you know, an Army 3-star, right? It's kind of the same, like, but in a, we have this common thread of service and like love of our Vietnamese heritage that kind of bind us.
But also, Tino and I, we've talked politics and we're on different spectrums, but you know what? There's a, Tino's a well-read, you know, Vietnamese American. I respect that. I learned from him. So I'm not afraid to talk politics with him, but you know, it's a respect for each other. So values or just individualism that, that draws us together. And I think the Bayusa VA USA, you know, that's what keeps us together. Because if you were to not associate yourself because of ideologies, you know, that we would dissolve. So I think that's, to answer your question, that I think just respect for each other is what keeps us together.
It's my fervent hope that the veteran community, you know, now that we're talking about Veterans Day, that the veteran community, you know, we are a cross section of America. We cut across the whole slice of America. But again, we have this common thread of public service. And I would, you know, it's always been my fervent hope that we are the ones that could kind of shine the path towards back towards kind of national unity and reconciliation, because, you know, we're all about putting the country before for ourselves, right? And putting aside any kind of personal or ideological differences and promoting kind of the welfare of our country. And I hope that you know, is kind of the path forward will be, you know, the veterans will play a leadership role in that.
Yeah, and Tino had mentioned, you know, earlier on about the, you know, the VA USA's mission statement about, you know, kind of honoring the past, you know, knowing your history, knowing your culture and your heritage, you know, kind of living with the present service members. And then what really inspires me a lot is, you know, promoting the future for our you know, tomorrow's youth, our future leaders, and, you know, offering our assistance, our support, our mentorship to the youth to, you know, to help them shape their growth and development. You know, I strongly believe that, you know, that we you have to do that and to pay it forward. So I spend a lot of my time with the youth. And I think, you know, if VA USA follows those three ideals, it makes us, you know, like many organizations, gives me my purpose, gives VA USA its purpose. So I really am proud of that mission statement.
I was going to bring this up, but you brought it up first, Tom. I think that all these sectors that we have in the Vietnamese community, like the film and entertainment group, the politics group, the academics, the intellectuals, there's writers, there's all these different subcategories of Vietnamese people doing like really amazing things in America. We don't know enough about the Vietnamese American veterans groups or the active duty Vietnamese Americans. How do we promote more of that? Because when there is a group or a body of Vietnamese Americans doing their thing in film or the military, the more exposure we get, the more voice and more vocal we get, and the more, I hate to use this word, but the more power comes from community. How do we get more vocal about the activities of what Vietnamese Americans are doing in the military? Because I feel like, although I came from that world, but I don't even know what you guys do. I didn't even know that this like mountain of activity exists. And I'm so happy that I get to be in this seat to witness like the cracking open of it for me. But I wonder what more can we all do to expose like the amazing world of Vietnamese America, Vietnamese Americans in the military world.
Yeah, we could always do more, right? So with VUSA, we have the host that annual banquet, and you know, some of the members through social media will advertise. We have some members in Southern California that go on TV, the Vietnamese channels. I've written a couple articles about Vietnamese American military life. It's just spreading the word. I talked to a lot of the parents of young Vietnamese Americans who are interested or were in the military, and they'll let them know that you can do great things. There's so many opportunities in the military for advancement, whether it be making a military career or starting out in the military, then going into, you know, the civilian world and doing stuff. The military offers up many opportunities for you. And, you know, I mean, again, stereotypes, but, you know, a lot of Vietnamese Americans, they want their kids to be doctors, lawyers, and, you know, the military vocation is not even on the list. And, you know, and it's associated, it's not associated with education, but you can go to ROTC, to the academies, and get a top-notch education. And, you know, I when I talk to the students and mentor them, I talk to their parents too and say, hey, this stereotype, this belief you have about the military is, you know, there's so much you can do, so many opportunities you can have in the military. So for me, it's by word of mouth, and you know, I touch the small crowds, but you're right. If we spread the word more, social media, I'm not sure articles, perhaps that will educate and open, you know, advertise that there is a successful, a proud Vietnamese American military community.
I think you touched on something, Ken. It's there's a lot of kind of cross-cutting, overlapping circles, right? Like when, yes, there is a Vietnamese American, you know, military community, but then there are, that overlaps with other things. Like you told us, Ken, about there are people in the entertainment industry that were Vietnamese American veterans, which I didn't even know, right? We have Vietnamese American veterans who are successful entrepreneurs, like, you know, Quang Pham, he's a CEO of a publicly traded company, you know, very, very wealthy guy, right? There's, you know, Vietnamese Americans that are in all these different industries that were also veterans, right? So I think that encouraging more of this kind of cross talk so that we're just not all self-contained in our, you know, small professional circles. And then also not just kind of talking to other Vietnamese, but inviting the mainstream to be more aware of what we all do, right? Because at the end of the day, yes, we are Vietnamese American veterans, but we're veterans. We are American veterans. We served and, you know, we I think just being visible and present, you know, and showing up to in mainstream American society and mainstream American veterans associations, which we do, just raises awareness, right? That there are faces that look like ours that are in the pinnacle of success in all these different industries and in all these different kind of facets of American society.
You know, one thing I want to add is still the Vietnamese Americans, we're still a relatively young minority, but it's one of the fastest growing ones.
50 years now, not so young.
Yeah. But I mean, as far compared to other nationalities. And then in Vietnam, it's one of the fastest growing economies and, you know, 100 million strong. I guess Vietnam, Vietnamese Americans are in the news now. And there's so many opportunities for Vietnamese Americans, especially the youth, our little fragment of the military community is a small piece. Again, proud of our heritage, and you know, in a few years, there's going to be so many. You'll hear more about when I say prosperous, successful Vietnamese Americans who serve and do great things for the nation and the world.
I really appreciate both of you coming on the podcast today. I believe that this is the start of more exposure for the Vietnamese American veterans groups. And I look forward to having you both on again and having more of your, you know, your community come on and talk about their stories, because these stories are actually so inspiring. And we're just now, with both of you on the Vietnamese podcast today, scratching the surface. And I look forward to it. I'm excited. And I'm very grateful to be in this room with the two of you. And thank you both for your service to the United States.
And yours as well, Ken.
Thanks, Kenneth.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trin. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.